Thank you, Jarell, and thank you, Greg, for reading that extraordinarily long passage that I asked you to read this morning. We had discussed if it was just going to be bits and pieces that he would read or the whole thing, and he opted for the whole thing, which I think is great. You get the whole picture, but it was a little lengthy, so thank you, Greg, for doing that. Thank you, Jarell, for introducing me. That saves me a little bit of time. I am going to do a little bit more of an introduction, but I'm going to do it very specifically through the lens of worship in my life. So you're not going to know a ton about me by the time we're done, but that's okay. You'll know a little bit about me through the lens of worship. So growing up, we did attend Crestmere, west of here. I'm sure most of you probably know where that is. And like Jarell mentioned, that's where we met Jarell and Katie, instrumental in my life. I'm very thankful for the ministry that they took part in my life. But me and my family, we attended there, and it was there at Meadowbrook that I first had the opportunity to get involved in worship. I was, I think, maybe 13 or 14. I couldn't peg down exactly how old I would have been. But I think I was probably 13 or 14. And my first kind of introduction into the worship team was through the opportunity to play guitar. So I got invited to play guitar, and I'm so grateful for that. Now, I'll be honest, at the time, my entire definition of worship would have been wrapped up in worship through music and song. When I heard the word worship, it equaled music and song. I think most of us probably know that there is a much grander definition and reality of worship, some of which we've taken part in here this morning. But it was worship and song for me at that point in time. It wasn't a very robust understanding of worship. And I wasn't necessarily a very robust guitar player. I probably landed on the low end of the scale of talent, if we're ranking ourselves. Not necessary to rank ourselves, but I was probably at the low end of talent. Yet I was very grateful for the opportunity to be involved. I think it's important to mention that at that time, my theology on worship also probably fell somewhere on the low end of the scale. I didn't have a great understanding necessarily of what worship even meant beyond I get to play the guitar on Sunday mornings. I don't know that I even understood that I should have a theology regarding worship. And I do want to start by prefacing my message today by saying I think for many Christians, and again, I am not pointing fingers because it has been a real journey for me, but for many Christians, I think our theology surrounding worship can land at the low end of the scale of understanding, or maybe sometimes be even slightly non-existent. And this is one of the reasons why I am excited this morning to have this conversation and to begin this conversation, because I think it's important that as a church collectively and then also as individuals, that we start to form a healthy theology regarding worship, because I think for myself, certainly, I can, but I think lots of us could do better regarding our theology around worship. Anyways, I graduated high school. I haven't graduated college yet in the story, just high school so far, which was a miracle on its own. But I graduated high school, and I headed up north to Bible college. I went all the way up to Sexsmith, actually. It's called Peace River Bible Institute, but at the time, it's now located in Sexsmith. I attended PRBI. I did 3 years of Bible college there. I only attempted one time to drop out, but again, a miracle occurred, and I graduated. I graduated with a Bachelor of Biblical Studies, and then I had the great opportunity to move back down here, and I worked under Jarell with Youth Unlimited, huge blessings in my life during that time. Anyways, that's the abridged version of college, but I'm just going to focus really quick in on the worship portion of college. So I did take my guitar. It was actually two guitars then. I had picked up bass guitar along the way, so I now played acoustic guitar and bass guitar, and I took them along with me in my very cramped Kia sporty little car that I drove, but they had to come. I took them with me, and they took the very important location of living in two guitar stands in my dorm room where I almost never touched them. They got very little love while I was at school, but they still played what I believe is an astronomically important role in this journey of what is worship in my life. During my time at college, I was invited a grand total of one time to lead worship with a group at the school. A girl named Christine invited me. I have no idea what the event was, but she invited me to lead with her. And she was shocked to learn that I did not know the B chord, which was necessary for one of the songs that we were going to be playing. It was actually the first song that we sang this morning. I needed the B chord for it, and I didn't know it. And so she was so kind and taught me a cheater B chord or a power B chord. And to this day, it is exclusively what I use to limp through songs that need the B chord. But it was this singular time at Bible College that I was involved in leading worship. But there was lots of worship at Bible College. As a body of the Bible College students, every morning we would gather for essentially a mini church service, and we would worship together. And most mornings this was done through music and corporate singing. One of the most impactful mornings for me in regards to this worship was in my second year. And I remember very vividly, I was sitting in a row with some of my friends, and the team got up to lead us in worship through song that morning. And it was two older male students that got up, and both of them happened to be bass guitar players. As a bass guitar player, this was fascinating to me. Not necessarily in a good way. Most people are probably familiar with the bass guitar. John does a beautiful job of playing it here for us. But it is that fantastic, booming background that gives some real vibrancy and life to songs. I am a huge fan of what the bass guitar adds to music. However, the bass guitar lacks what I would consider some very practical and important abilities. It doesn't, I think ever, I've never heard it happen, play the melody. It can sound quite tonally deaf by itself. It is generally a low-range instrument that doesn't offer a lot of life. So I was astounded when the entire worship service was led by two bass guitars. I recall looking over at my friend, her name was Sarah, and she was singing. She was singing, and her hands were lifted up quite genuinely. She was worshiping God, and I quite genuinely was stupefied that that was happening. Later, I said to her, I could not worship to that music. It was so bad. And she said something to me that really began to change my heart in regards to worship. She said, Haley, worship is not about if the music is good. It's about God. And that was the truth. And unfortunately, that was news to me at 21 years old. I didn't necessarily like that it was the truth, but it was. And so that's when my mindset around worship started to change and started to mature, and I started to think through and mull over what worship really was, and I started to finally develop a theology around worship. So it was during my last year of college that I was approached by an acquaintance. And she invited me to be a part of a missions trip that she was leading. So each year, PRBI sort of ordained, maybe that's the right word, some missions trips to go out from the school. And she was leading one of them. And this was going to be a trip to the Philippines, and it was going to be a month long, and it was going to be a music ministry. And she invited me to be the acoustic guitar player on that team. Sounds awesome, right? Without almost any hesitation, I said no. That did not sound like something for me because I wasn't very good at guitar, and there was certainly other people who should be doing that trip. Her response to me was, no, Haley, I want you because you're average. Very uplifting. So that was flattering. She specifically wanted me because I was an average, even-keel guitar player. She had a fantastic electric guitar player picked out who was going to do all of the riffs and melody stuff, and I was invited to be average. So I did. I ended up going. Her very flattering compliments convinced me, and I am so glad that I went on that trip. It was a life-changing trip, not just in the sense of worship through music, but life in general. Some of that will have to be story for another time. So we did all of our months-long practicing and training, It became grueling and unfun to some degree how often we trained together. But eventually May came and we got on the plane with all of our gear. It was a team of eight. So if you can imagine, we had to take all of our own musical gear, but then we also had to be clothed. So it was a lot of gear. And we left for the Philippines. I can't share even half of that trip, but the part that I'll share today that was most impactful to me in regards to worship is what I would like to share with you. So we got out to this one area where we were going to do a concert, and it was an outdoor stage. And our host met us there, and the basic journey of the trip was we would set up our stuff, the host would meet us, and then together we would go out into the community, we would invite people to come enjoy a free music concert, and then that would give us the opportunity to present them with the gospel. So this specific concert was taking place in the evening outside, and it was partway through this event that a storm set in. I don't know if any of you have been to the Philippines. Has anybody been to the Philippines here? No? Okay. So in the Philippines, my experience in the Philippines is that when a storm sets in the Philippines, it is now, and it sets in, and it is here. So I couldn't find specific pictures of the actual event of the storm I'm talking about, but this is in another location in the Philippines. I don't know if you can see it really well. I had to steal pictures off of Facebook because I couldn't find mine. But when it started raining, you just were wet immediately. There was no chance to escape. That's too bad. Now you're wet. Deal with it. So we're partway through our first set, and this storm comes in. And it is possibly one of the most torrential storms of all of the torrential storms in the Philippines. And there is sheets of dousing rain just coming in at us. And none of the people in attendance were leaving. They just were all getting soaked. This here is about like 5 minutes of rain that had conglomerated there. You can see it shooting out of the eaves. So that's how wet everybody was. We were under a roof, so our instruments were protected, and so we were mostly staying dry, apart from what was blowing in on us. And I remember watching in front of me, there was lightning. The whole sky was an absolutely crazy light show. And then a strike of lightning just came out of the sky and hit something that looked very much like this. I believe it must have been a transformer. I'm not an electrician. But the whole thing, the whole system exploded. Into fire. It blew up, and that was pretty much it for our sound system for that day. I'm not an electrician, like I said, but I think those are important. So the whole thing exploded, and that was it. The sound went down, and the music stopped, and everyone just sort of stood there in silence. But there was such a strong sense of the Holy Spirit in that place as we were all worshiping together that it was like we just have to keep worshiping. So Christelle, who was the leader, she looked at me and she said, "Play, Haley." My acoustic guitar happened to be the only instrument that could make any noise without power. And so it landed on me to play, Haley. I started playing and they started singing, and it was nothing like we had practiced. It was drowned out by the rain. I was not entirely on time. It felt really messy. It was not what we had hoped to deliver as a worship service that evening, but I recall it as one of the most authentic moments of worship on that trip, and possibly in my life to that point. And again, it made me so aware of the question, what is worship? Is it when the music goes well and the sound is perfect? Is it when we feel good? What is it? So today, my hope is to explore that with you. Not only what is worship, but how do we do worship well? Because here is the truth. Whether you are here today as a believer in Jesus or not, whether you are a regular church person or not, you are a worshiper. I can say that confidently because we are all worshipers, because we all worship something or someone. We all elevate something or maybe multiple things, and in that, we are worshiping. So today I would like to focus on who it is that deserves our worship and how we should direct our worship to him. Specifically today in the context of worship through song. So I do want to make this one caveat before we start. If this was a worship workshop, and maybe it was a group of worship leaders that I had the privilege of talking with, then this conversation could be a little bit different. There is some things that I might say this morning that could give license to be a lazy worship leader, or that a worship leader could take as their opportunity to not do their part in leading worship well, because there is responsibility as a worship leader to be in tune with the congregation, to make sure that their heart is in the right place, to make sure that they aren't being a distraction and those kinds of things. So that's the one caveat that I do want to leave us with this morning before diving in too deep. But the goal of this morning is to be talking sort of on the flip side of that. How do we as worshipers worship well? I think the natural starting point for this conversation is defining what is worship. It can be extremely difficult to do something well if we do not have a concrete grasp on what exactly it is that we're doing. So let's look at a few definitions. If you look up worship in just the regular old dictionary, you will find the feeling or expression of reverence and adoration for a deity. Show reverence and adoration for a deity, honor with religious rites. This is a fine definition of worship. It gives us a good starting point in our understanding, but when I personally am seeking to understand things of the Bible, I always like to try and understand the words in the context, especially from a biblical perspective. So let's take the word worship and try to get an understanding of it from a biblical point of view. Most of us here probably know that the Bible originally, surprise, was not written in English. It was written in Hebrew and it was written in Greek, and then translators took those documents and they translated them into what we now have and read in common English. So whether you're reading the King James Version or the New Living Translation or any other translation in English, what you are reading is something that humans translated from English and Greek into English. It's during this translation that I think sometimes we lose some real richness and depth of certain theologies and concepts. And I think worship might be a really great case study for this reality. Where the original languages of the Bible might have 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 different words that have the same basic meaning but offer different layers of understanding, we oftentimes just have one English word, which is sort of crazy to consider. Like, oh, they have all these words, but it's fine. We'll just use this one. It gets the point across. So I found 8 different words in the Bible, 3 in the Hebrew in the Old Testament and 5 in the Greek in the New Testament, that are all translated simply to the word worship in our English. Clearly, we don't have time to explore all 8 of those definitions. I'm sure that was a panic moment for you that I was going to define 8 words. I'm not going to. But it's something that I would challenge you guys to dig into by yourselves and look at. Each of the Hebrew words carries a fairly similar meaning, but the one that we'll look at shows up the most. It has 172 occurrences. It is shaka. It means to depress, that is, prostrate, especially reflexively, in homage to royalty or God. Bow down, crouch, fall down flat, humbly beseech, do reverence, make to stoop, worship. There's a lot. It's a lot in that one word, shaka. But what I take away from this is that worship, when used in the context of the Old Testament, most commonly used in regards to what God expected of his people as a response to him, or how God instructed his people to respond to him, is that it should be an immediate, not necessarily emotive, almost knee-jerk reaction to the reality of who God is. This is interesting to me in this conversation of what is worship, because if we're going to answer the question, what is worship, based solely on this definition, I think we would be hard-pressed to define it as anything other than an obedient physical and mental response to a holy God. And that's interesting to me, and it's interesting to me because I think we are today fairly quickly to want or even to require an emotive or emotional reality before we will engage in worship. And I think that's especially true of when we choose to engage in worship through music. Please hear me clearly on this. I am not saying that worship should be void of emotion. I am not suggesting that worship must be done in such a way that emotion is not a part of it. But I do think that we do well to recognize that when the Israelites were given the commands to worship God, that what God laid out for them as how to worship, there wasn't an overtly emotional aspect to that. And that says to me, worship regardless of how you feel, because worship is not about you, it is about a fully holy God. God says, sing praise to me, lift your hands to me. Worship me because of who I am, not because of what you are experiencing emotionally. This is where I have to pause, because so often when we talk about worship through music, especially, I believe, in a congregational setting, we talk about how it made us feel. Normally these conversations happen after the fact, right? Much like me in college. We talk about how it made us feel, or maybe how it didn't make us feel. And I honestly have to say, I don't believe that these definitions give much space for our worship of God to be based off of how we do or do not feel. When we look at the reality of how the Israelites worshiped during their time in the desert, and then as they came into the promised land, it was done very systematically. The temple was set up. There was the outer courts. Then there was the holy place, and inside of that was the Holy of Holies, and we know that it's in the Holy of Holies that the Spirit of God resided. And the Israelites were given very specific and quite strict orders about how worship would be done in that place and in their lives, when worship would be done, and even what animal would be sacrificed before worship could take place. It was a system. And it was a system that had been put in place by God to make sure that the Israelites were giving to God the honor, respect, and worship that he was due, that he deserved. There's a common theme throughout the entire Old Testament. The Israelites are warned over and over again, do not forget me. This is God speaking. Do not forget me, and thereby give your worship to other gods, and then be cut off from me. In God's eyes, their obedience to him was directly tied to their worship of him. Sorry, clearly I missed one. In God's eyes, their obedience to him was directly tied to their worship of him. These are just a few Bible verses that I'm going to read that I believe exclamate this point. Exodus 34:14. Do not worship any other god, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. Deuteronomy 8:19. But I assure you of this, if you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, worshiping and bowing down to them, you will certainly be destroyed. Deuteronomy 30:17-18. But if your heart turns away and you refuse to listen, and if you are drawn away to serve and worship other gods, then I warn you now that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live a long, good life in the land you are crossing the Jordan to occupy. And lastly, 1 Kings 9:6-7. But if you or your descendants abandon me and disobey the commands and decrees I have given you, and if you serve and worship other gods, then I will uproot Israel from this land that I have given them. I will reject this temple I have made holy to honor my name. I will make Israel an object of mockery and ridicule among the nations. These are just a few examples of the command that was given over and over and over and over again to the Israelites. And these examples make it clear that God sees their obedience to him as directly tied to their worship of him. And I would submit that it is the same for us. I believe that because God knows the human heart and understands that it is fickle and knows we are quick to forget, and because he is a loving God, he set up this system of worship. It was like a foolproof system that if the Israelites just did it, they would succeed in their worship to God. We know, and we will discuss momentarily how this ends for Israelites, but it is interesting insight for me into the realities of what God's followers are called to in regards to worship. So let's move into the New Testament. There was 5 definitions of worship in the New Testament. And interestingly enough, one of them does introduce an emotional reality. For those of you who are railing against the idea that I said that it's not based on emotional reality, we're coming to an emotional reality. But the first one and the most common of the definitions is doxa. It's very straightforward, and I believe even in its very straightforwardness, translates fairly clearly from the Old Testament over into the New Testament. It just means honor, praise, worship. Hard to get that one wrong. The second most used word is proskuneo, and it means to kiss like a dog licking his master's hand, to fawn or crouch to, that is, prostrate oneself in homage, adore, worship. So we have a puppy at home. His name is Tucker. This is his beautiful face. We bought him this December, and the sort of like the sales pitch to my husband, the like, why can we buy him pitch to my husband, was that he would be our daughter's dog. We have 3 little girls, and they desperately wanted a dog, and here's the answer to that prayer. So he was supposed to be the girl's dog, but it very quickly became apparent that he is, in fact, my dog. I am his favorite. He chooses me over anyone else in the house at all times. I am his favorite. When I come in, especially if I have been gone for a few hours or an extended period of time, he literally cannot love me hard enough. He has to be like right in my face, licking. And if you're not a dog person, that's disgusting to you. That's fine. If you are, maybe that's still disgusting to you. But he has to love me so hard. And he has to be so close. And if I've really been gone for a long time, then all of the licking isn't even enough. He sort of starts to like nip and whine in my ear. I actually don't love it. But it is him expressing his immense love for me. And it is simply because he wants me to know that he knows I'm there and he adores me. And he adores me just because I am his master. That is what I am getting from this definition of worship. The first appearance of this use of the word worship is in Matthew when the wise men are seeking Jesus after his birth. And they come and they say, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." The wise men had what I believe was a very special insight given to them about who this new baby Jesus was. And they just wanted to be in his presence, and they just wanted to adore him because of who he was. And it's interesting to me that it's at this point Christ has come to earth, the one who will make the new covenant has arrived, and it's now that there's an adoption of the word worship that does give rise or entrance to an emotional reality connected to worship. But that is so much the reality of Christ. What was once untouchable and unapproachable except through the blood of animals and sacrifices is now here, God with us. That in itself makes so much sense that now there would be an emotional connection within worship. But I think we still need to be cautious to note that it is not an emotional state that dictates the worship or causes the worship. It is the one who is being worshiped that creates the emotional response. So what do we decipher from these definitions? What does it mean in regards to how we worship or what worship is? How do we apply it? First of all of these definitions, there is a physical reality of being bent down, prostrate, crouched over. A physical reality. When is the last time in worship we were willing to say with our whole body, "You, God, are so great. You are so holy. You are so much. I cannot stand before you." And I am not here this morning to tell you what that physical reality should look like. I am merely bringing your attention to the fact that it exists. Secondly, there is a reality that it is expected. Worship is expected by God. None of these definitions give off the idea that if we feel a certain way, then we should worship God. Or if the music sounded really good, then we should offer ourselves in worship to God. No. We worship God because God is fully holy and so much worthy of our worship that we just do it. Psalm 95, "Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care." If we know this God, we must worship him. We know that worship, and not only worship, but how we worship is important to God. And we can know that because it is an unbroken theme in the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation. And God does not change. So if it was important to him then, it is important to him now. I found this passage, this very lengthy passage that Greg was so kind to read us, extremely insightful and very impactful for myself as I was preparing for this message. God had warned his people over and over again, "Worship me only, or you will be cut off from me." And here we come. We come to 2 Kings 17, and it's interesting. Actually, Ron alluded to this time in the Israelites' lives last week in his sermon, and we're going to look at it briefly now. 2 Kings, I promise I'm not going to read the whole thing again. 2 Kings 17, 6 to 8. "Finally, in the ninth year of King Hoshea's reign, Samaria fell, and the people of Israel were exiled to Assyria. They were settled in colonies in Halah along the banks of the Habor River in Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. This disaster came upon the people of Israel because they worshipped other gods. They sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them safely out of Egypt and had rescued them from the power of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt." God had been clear with exactly what he expected of his people, and here it is clearly laid out for us to read what the outcome of their disobedience in worship was. They were cut off from God. They were cut off from God's very best for them, and they were exiled from the promised land. We would do well as God's people to take seriously the call to worship on our lives. One of the really impactful statements for me comes at the end of this passage, and just to refresh our memories and just to set the stage, the king of Assyria, who had overtaken the Israelites, sent them away. So he overtook them, and then he sent them out. He exiled them to other places, and then he brought in other people groups, and he settled them in the place that he had just sent the Israelites away from. And then some crazy stuff starts to happen. I don't know if you caught it when Greg was reading, but these people settle here, and now all of a sudden some lions come in, and they start eating the people. A little out of the ordinary for us, but I guess possibly not entirely out of the ordinary for them. But these lions are coming, and they are killing people within this new group. So the people get their heads together, and they essentially decide, this is happening because we aren't honoring the God of this area. That's why these lions are coming and eating us. So it is important to note that these people groups who had been settled here, they were polytheistic. They served many gods. It's estimated that they may have served upwards of 2,400 gods. So when they're announcing, we need to serve the God of this area, they are not saying, we are going to humbly bow our knee to the one true God. What they are saying is, we need to add the God of this area into our melting pot of gods so the lions stop eating us. So they bring back a religious leader from the Israelites, and they say, teach us what it is your God requires so that we can stop getting eaten by the lions. And so this religious leader does. He teaches them what God requires of them, and it appears that the people that had settled there then do adopt at least some of these worship requirements to God. They start doing some of what has been taught to them by this Israelite leader. We get to verse 20, or sorry, we get to verse, it's very small, 29. But these various groups of foreigners also continued to worship their own gods. And if you skip down to 37, it reads, be careful at all times to obey the decrees, regulations, instructions, and commands that he wrote for you. You must not worship other gods. Do not forget the covenant I made with you, and do not worship other gods. You must worship only the Lord your God. He is the one who will rescue you from all your enemies. But the people would not listen and continued to follow their former practices. So while these new residents worshiped the Lord, they also worshiped their idols, and to this day, their descendants do the same. Is that me? While I worship God, while I sing praise to God, while I lift my hands to God, do I worship other idols? Do I only worship when I know the song well and it speaks to my heart? Do I only lift my hands when the song makes me feel a certain way? Is my response to God in worship one that I am only willing to offer when certain conditions are met and I deem it appropriate to offer worship to Him? Because if this is true, then I would submit that while we are worshiping God, we are also worshiping other idols. Anything that is before God, or we see as more important than God, or that takes our attention away from God in worship, is rightly defined, I believe, as an idol. So do I idolize a certain type of worship music? Do I idolize certain worship leaders? Do I idolize certain environments? Or am I willing to offer worship to God because He is holy and He is God and I am not? Because that is the worship He is seeking. And it is a struggle for me. It's a struggle for me. I believe it's probably a struggle for all of us because we are sinful humans. There is certain types of music that I like better. There is certain styles of music that I like better. But if I let it be about that, then I am no longer worshiping God. If worship is anything other than us bowing before God because of who He is, then our worship is misguided. And if our worship is misguided, it is not a worthy offering to the Creator of the world and the Savior of our souls. Are we willing as a congregation to sacrificially worship God together? Are we willing to corporately say, I worship God because He is worthy and for no other reason? Not because our favorite worship team is playing, not because our favorite song is pumping, but because God is worthy, and so we lift our voices to him. There's an old chorus that we used to sing at Meadowbrook, and it went, "We bring the sacrifice of praise into the house of the Lord. We bring the sacrifice of praise into the house of the Lord, and we offer up to you the sacrifices of thanksgiving, and we offer up to you the sacrifices of joy." As a child, that song made very little sense to me. There was nothing in me that could understand what about worship was a sacrifice. But more and more, it makes sense to me because worship was designed by God to be a sacrifice to him. It's designed to be me laying myself down and lifting up the Lord. It's God saying, "Come to me regardless of circumstances," and not just immediate circumstances like the music or the atmosphere or the temperature or the volume or if there is or isn't drums or if there was two hymns and one chorus. It's coming regardless of all circumstances and saying, "You, God, are worthy of worship." I'm sure you're all familiar with the hailstorm that came through 3 weeks ago, however long ago. It was fairly atrocious and caused much devastation in a short period of time. And there are farmers that belong to our congregation who at that time watched their crops be completely laid flat and devastated, their livelihoods destroyed. But that Sunday morning, I still saw those people here, and they were still worshiping God. And they were doing that in spite of their circumstances, because the fact that that had just happened to them didn't change who God was, and that he was good and worthy of their worship. So what are the things that hold you back from worshiping God obediently? And what do you need to change in order to come back or possibly come for the first time to worship him? So that together we will be those who are worshiping him in spirit and in truth, like Jesus talks to the woman at the well about. Again, I am not here this morning to be the judge of how or why you worship in the manner that you do. I am called only to judge myself on that. I'm not called to judge whether you lift your hands or dance in the aisle or fall flat on your face or stand stoic in your worship to God. That is between you and the Holy Spirit and what he calls you to. But I am humbled that I was invited this morning to start the conversation and to take the invitation to discuss how are we worshiping? Are we allowing the style or setting or the fact that there's two bass guitar players or that the electricity just went out or any of the other hundreds of things that Satan would love to use to dissuade you from worshiping a holy God? Are we allowing any of those things to hold us back from worshiping him and worshiping him obediently in the way that he has called us to worship him? Let's pray. God, you are worthy of all of our worship. And by your Holy Spirit, I pray that you would please move us towards a more obedient worship of you. That we would be stirred as people to answer the call to worship on our lives, and that as a congregation, we would please you in that offering.